Hey, everybody, and welcome to Beyond the Classroom. I'm your host, Jenna Dykeman. I'm a registered dietitian and one of the nutrition faculty members at BYU Idaho. Beyond the Classroom is a 13-episode podcast that will take you beyond the concepts you are learning in the classroom and give you the opportunity to dig deeper into the world of nutrition. In this week's episode, Marinda Taylor joins us on the show. Marinda is a registered dietitian and will share with us how she decided to become a dietitian and what she loves about being a dietitian. She will also talk about tips for feeding young children, how to help children who may be picky eaters, and teach us about the importance of developing trust with your children when it comes to mealtimes. In the segment Time Out with the TAs, Haley, Brianna, and Kenzie will be giving you a sneak peek into the other nutrition classes offered at BYU Idaho. Are you guys ready? All right, let's get to it.
I'm Brianna.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Kenzie.
And this is Time Out with the TAs.
Welcome to this week's episode of Time Out with the TAs. I'm going to start this week off with a quote that I found in a book I've been reading called The Road to Character by David Brooks. And basically, just a little background on the book. It's every chapter, he talks about a different character or characteristic that this character shows, and then he goes into depth on how they started implementing that characteristic into their life and so on and so forth, and it's a really good book. But the quote that he said that really stuck out to me was, "We don't become better because we acquire new information. We become better because we acquire better loves. We don't become what we know. Education is a process of love formation. When you go to school, it should offer you new things to love." And so as we're leaving our first or second or fifth or sixth, or for some of us, eighth or ninth semesters of school, I think it's just really important to be evaluating on a regular basis whether you're loving what you're learning or not. It's really hard for me to even fathom not doing something I'm completely passionate about in my education. First of all, because school is expensive, but second, because it's consuming so much of my time and has been for the last few years, that if I wasn't loving it, I think I would be just miserable. I guess I shouldn't say I can't fathom it, because my very first year of school was that. I was doing a education program in high school sciences, and I was doing that because that's kind of what my parents really wanted me to do. And so I thought, they know better than I do. They're adults. I was a kid at the time, and I still am a kid, let's be honest. But after I started taking more of my elective classes and learned a little bit more about the exercise and nutrition world, I realized that that is what I loved and that is what I wanted to be studying. And now as I'm doing my schoolwork every day, it's not just a T to cross and an I to dot. It's like something I'm excited to be reading and studying and learning about because I'm loving what I'm studying. And if nothing else, I can promise you that if you're going into schooling with the goal of finding something that you're passionate about and loving what you're learning, then that studying and those assignments are going to start to be easier, that the tests aren't going to be as scary, and they're still going to be hard, but it's going to be easier because you're actually enjoying it. So just some words of encouragement to help you, or hope that you will seek schooling with the goal of loving what you're learning.
I love that quote, and I love that idea. And I think sometimes that can be a hard thing for us to grasp, because college is filled with busy work. And even when you're studying something that you love, there's still things maybe that you don't entirely love about it. Like Kenzie was saying, things are still going to be hard. Tests will still be hard. Some assignments will still be hard. Going to class every day might still be hard, but finding that is really important. And I think another thing is that sometimes we go down the wrong path. like how Kenzie was saying, she started school doing something that she wasn't completely in love with. And sometimes it's hard for us to realize that we can find the right path. And sometimes that takes more time, but it's so worth it in the end, because really it's so exciting. So exciting when you can find something that you're just like so excited for that, like, you just want to put so much work into it because it's so awesome for you to do.
And don't you find, Haley, that, at least for me, maybe, I get asked a lot what schooling I'm doing because for some reason the title exercise physiology isn't one that sticks. So people are always asking what that is. And because I love it, I love getting that question and being able to talk about it. And I'm excited to tell people about it and what I can do with it and what I've learned. Whereas if you didn't like it, that would be such a boring conversation to have. And at this time, yeah. You're answering that question all the time. People are always asking.
True.
Right?
So. Yeah. And it's funny because I'm a food science major, and a lot of people have never heard of that major. And it's really funny, especially people outside of schooling, outside of college, that have no idea what food science is. Like, I tell them I'm doing food science and they're like, oh, you want to be a chef? And I'm like, no. Let me tell you what it's really like, because I think it's the coolest thing to talk about because it's so exciting. And I always feel so cool when I talk about it. I mean, most people might not think it's cool, but I think it's so cool, and that's what matters.
I think it's cool.
Aw, thanks.
I think it's cool, too. I love what you shared, Kenzie. While I was listening to you read the quote, the part that stood out to me, that education is a process of love formation, because I feel like I know at the beginning of my education, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and I was kind of frustrated because I felt like everyone around me just knew what they wanted to do and they had found their love. And I quickly realized that that wasn't the case, that I wasn't the only one, but that my education, as I like learned more, it opened new doors for me. And I was open-minded while I was receiving my education at the beginning. And that's what led me to want to go the nutrition route. I think that it's so cool that we do have this opportunity to be at college and to like gain this information and figure out what we do love. Cause I think it's really important to, like both of you guys said, just adding on to that, it's really important to do what you love, especially if you're going to school for it, but you're also most likely going to do that for most of your life. That like your education is what's going to pan out kind of your life. And so you should do something that you love. So thank you so much for sharing that, Kenzie. I love that.
Thank you for your thoughts, Brianna and Haley. They were awesome. Sister Eichmann, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, I never heard that quote before, but I really like it. And I like how it just really defines the purpose of education. Because like all of you were saying, just how students aren't successful until they find the joy for learning. And there's a talk by Elder Bednar, and I think the title is Learning to Love Learning. And that's kind of the purpose of an undergraduate education. Yes, you're learning a lot of new material, but you're learning how to learn and you're learning to love that learning process. And I liked from your quote, Kenzie, how you said it said something related to education, and it says it gives you new things to love. So I think as students are trying to be open to new majors, to new classes, they think they really want to go into this field, but they start taking classes and realize that, kind of like what you all were saying, that's not their true passion. And then maybe they take a general ed class and find, you know, a topic that's really interesting to them, that they really enjoy, and they come to love it. So I love learning. I love just that education process. I know students don't like tests. They don't like quizzes. Unfortunately, at this point, that's the only way we can really measure progression, I guess, in the higher education. But I think if students look beyond the tests and focus on really learning and coming to love that learning process, I think that's when students are the most successful. And that's what I've seen in my students as well. So yeah, that's a great quote. Thanks, Kenzie.
So if you have loved taking this nutrition class and you love learning about nutrition, then we hope that that's something that you can carry on through the rest of your learning. Maybe taking this class has inspired you to want to take more classes. And so what we're going to talk about for the rest of our TA segment is some of the other nutrition classes on campus that are available to you if you want to take them and to dive more in depth into nutrition. So me, Brianna, and Kenzie have all taken more nutrition classes here at BYU-Idaho. So we're each just going to share a little bit about one of the classes that we've taken. I'll start first with one of the classes I've taken, which is Intro to Dietetics. So Intro to Dietetics is a really cool class where you learn a lot about the requirements to be a registered dietitian. And through that, you learn about skills required, such as resume writing, interview skills, professional skills that can help you to be successful. And then you also get to dive really in depth into the different types of dietitians and learn more about their responsibilities and their field to get a better idea of what being a registered dietitian looks like. So I like that class. It's a pretty simple class. It was really fun and I learned a lot and it made me want to be a registered dietitian. So that's a cool class to take if you're maybe interested in becoming a registered dietitian.
The class that I'm talking about is Nutrition 330, which is Nutrition in the Life Cycle. And I took this class 2 semesters ago and I loved it. It talks about just the nutritional requirements through every stage of life. That's what it is. Every chapter in the book is a different stage of life, and you go through from pregnancy to the infant all the way to the elderly. And it talks about certain nutrients that are required or that you need to have more of, and exercise requirements. And it even talks about, I loved when we were talking about kids, because something that I'm excited to be is a mother. And I thought it was, even if like those who aren't working to become a dietitian, I think it's a good class just to have to be more knowledgeable about like what your nutrition should be as you're growing older, but also what your kids' nutrition should be as you're younger. And there's so much I learned that even the requirements for being pregnant and things like that, that I just didn't know. I think it was cool that for my future family, I learned a lot of what things that I need to do with my kids. And it even talked about with kids, picky eaters and how to adjust to that and things like that. And so it was such a good class. And I recommend that class to like those who are wanting to become dietitians, but also just those who want to become more knowledgeable about nutrition through the life cycle.
I really like both the classes that Haley and Brianna talked about. I took Nutrition 120 quite a few semesters ago, and then 330 I took it with Brianna 2 semesters ago. But the one I'm talking about is Nutrition 350, which is sports nutrition, and I took that with Haley last semester. And this one, I think for me, was the class that really answered a lot of questions and was really applicable to where I am in my life right now. Because I'm studying exercise physiology, I spend a lot of time not only in the books learning about my body, but also in the gym trying to improve. And I'm exercising all the time, and I wanted to make sure that I was treating it the right way. And this is a class that is specific to nutrition for that type of lifestyle, whether you're just exercising in your own regime or if you're a college or a professional athlete. We're learning about exercising for that as well. And in this class, we got to do an athlete project where we actually got information from my cousin, who's a basketball player up in Canada, I guess. And we learned his diet and his sweat rate and his training regime. And then we were able to help him improve it and create maybe a potentially better diet or a better supplement routine or whatever it is that he was having. And that was cool. And then we also got to make our own sports drink, which was really fun. After we studied electrolytes, we made a pretty good drink. It was quite delicious. And throughout the whole class as well, there's lots of taste days where we would have lots of different protein bars or sports drinks or whatever it may be, and kind of taste test and see what we liked and what we didn't like. And it was just a really interesting, super applicable class. We learned about how to actually apply the calorie equations, like the Mifflin equation and the Harrison-Benedict equation, but apply it to someone that's working out by applying an activity factor. And it was just like a really realistic class so that you could learn how to treat your body properly in training. And that was really cool. I loved it.
I really enjoyed taking that class with Kinsey. Doing the project was really fun. And sports nutrition was just so awesome because it's really a hot topic right now, sports nutrition. And everyone is all talking about protein and all these things and how they, the best way that they can gain muscle and all that stuff. So it's cool to learn those things and clear up misconceptions. That class is typically taught by Brother Keller, who's an awesome teacher. And I took another class from him, which is the highest level nutrition class, which is nutritional biochemistry. And I'm going to be honest, that class is, it's a little intense, it's challenging, but the information I learned from it was super rewarding. It's like taking nutrition 150 and everything you learned, but then like diving way in depth into it. You learn a lot. You go really in depth into metabolism and different cellular processes, and you learn more about fat transport throughout the body, really in depth. And you get to pick a topic throughout the semester and research it. So I did a research project all about high fructose corn syrup and its health effects. And Brother Keller's super awesome. He brings lots of hands-on activities into class. At one point, we were learning about making cheese. And so he like made us, we like kind of started to make cheese in class. It was really fun. So definitely a more challenging class, but you learn a lot of the whys about nutrition, why things happen, and taught me a lot about doing research for myself and understanding scientific information at a microscopic level. So really cool class. I recommend that. It does have more prereqs to it, but if you're in a major that you're going to be taking those prereqs, then I would totally suggest taking it because you'll learn a lot.
Can I just throw something else in here that I messed up on when I started taking nutrition classes? If you are interested in carrying on this part of your education, make sure you get Nutrition 200 done because it is like the baseline prerequisite for all of these classes. And you can't double up. You can't do 200 and 330 at the same time. It's the prerequisite. So make sure that if this is something you're interested in, you slide right into Nutrition 200. And it's very similar to 150, just like the next step up. You do a lot of similar projects, and it's also really cool. But make sure you get that one done.
So those are just some classes that we've taken on campus that can teach you more about nutrition. If you're interested in them, I highly recommend looking into the prerequisites and registering for them when they're open and when they're available for your schedule. Even if you take them as electives, really, really interesting stuff that you can apply to your own life and to your career if that's something that you're interested in.
Thank you, Marinda, for joining me on the podcast this week. I'm excited to interview you and hear a little bit more about you and talk with you more about child feeding.
Thanks for having me, Jenna.
You're a dietitian. You work at BYU Idaho. And I just want to ask you to learn a little bit more about your background. Why did you decide to become a dietitian?
So interestingly enough, when I was the age of a lot of your listeners, I didn't even know what a dietitian was. I know that seems kind of crazy, and I had no idea that it was going to be the perfect career path for me. But following some inspiration, and I had decided to kind of look into the field of health and nutrition to kind of see what options were out there. I was a senior in high school, and I don't know, maybe a lot of your listeners have done something like this, but our school took us on a like university tour. And so we got to go to different departments at different universities for the weekend and kind of ask questions and learn things. And I was actually able to meet with a few college professors, and I remember sitting in an office with a really nice little lady, and I had said, you know, I'm kind of interested in the field of nutrition or health, and she started listing all these different positions, things that you could do, and she said the word dietitian, and I remember stopping her and saying, what did you say? A diet what? And she explained what a dietitian was and how it's someone that works, you know, places they could work, like the clinical dietitians, community dietitians, food service positions. And I just remember in that little small office at that moment, having one of those aha moments, like for me, that it was something that's what I want to do. And I latched onto it, and I remember going to once I decided what university I wanted to attend, I remember right at the beginning sitting down with my counselors or whatever, you know, getting in your department, and they laid out a path for me and kind of, you know, this is what I need to do. These are the classes I need to have before this, and just kind of mapped things out for me. And I feel very fortunate that I was able to be very efficient with my schooling and take the classes I needed at the right time. So if I had any words of advice about deciding a career path, or, you know, how I decided to become a dietitian, I would say to your listeners, please build a network, talk to people. If you're interested in something, find others that are interested in that and ask about it. And don't be shy. Any questions that you ask, most people love to share their story. And the more dietitians that I met, the more I learned what my options were. And I definitely would work closely with your advisors. I think that really saved me a lot of time in school to be really efficient with the how-tos and kind of laying out a plan for me and becoming in a career that I really loved.
I love how you talked about just the people that influenced you. And that's such great advice, because I feel, yeah, sometimes it's easy to say, I can figure it out on my own. I mean, I can go on the internet and find what I need to, but there's nothing like just getting advice from people who are already in the field. And kind of like you said, you worked with them to figure out the plan. They know what to do. And if you just ask for help, they'll be able to make your life so much easier.
Definitely. And for me, it was really interesting because I wouldn't even have known to type in an internet search, you know, what is a dietitian? So yeah, even something that simple to just talk to people and get ideas.
Heavenly Father definitely puts people into your life to help you and guide you for sure.
Agreed.
Where did you go to school?
So I actually, this is going to date myself a little bit, but started out at Ricks College.
Okay, nice.
And graduated from Idaho State University.
Are you from Idaho then originally?
Yes, yep. Yeah, I grew up in Idaho Falls and still live there this day, raising my family here.
Awesome. So after your schooling and you became a dietitian, do you mind just sharing a couple of different places that you've worked and maybe what you liked about them?
Sure. One thing that I really enjoyed, so after I got my bachelor's degree, I had a year internship, and I was very fortunate to secure a position here locally where I knew I was going to be living. And so it became a great way for me to kind of network. That year internship, I got to do a lot. I gained a lot of experience in places, you know, food service, hospitals, health departments, outpatient counseling. I really got to get my feet wet and see kind of the aspects of dietetics that I really resonated with and really enjoyed. My first job right out of this internship, once I became a registered dietitian, I took a job as a clinical dietitian at Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center. And this was a fast-paced job with medical nutrition therapy. And I did things like, you know, tube feedings, working with diabetes care, heart health. I did patient counseling. I really enjoyed the team of healthcare workers that I was able to work with, you know, doctors, occupational therapists. I really enjoyed that. That time in my life had started having a family and decided that I needed to work a little bit less. And so after that, I took a position with the State of Idaho Child Nutrition Program. And this was one of my favorite jobs. I worked there for about 10 years. I was a cadre for Southeastern Idaho. And I just really enjoyed what I did. I think after working in a hospital setting and I was kind of treating symptoms a little bit more, to come into wellness and promoting health was just like a breath of fresh air for me. I really enjoyed that aspect of that job. My true love in dietetics is truly promoting wellness. And I got to work with things like team nutrition and grants, and we would go into schools. We had a mascot that came with us, Power Panther, and we would teach kids to eat smart and play hard. And we had simple messages that I knew were going to make a big difference for these young kids in their lives and their health habits for the rest of their lives. And I also reviewed home daycares in that position, which was really a big eye-opener for me. There was always lots of things that, when you're in the field of nutrition, things that you feel like you're really helping people with, things they may not have ever realized. And so in the homes of daycare owners and stuff, we really could make a big difference. And I also, the third aspect of that job was I worked with the school lunch programs. We implemented wellness policies. We educated the staff. We did food safety trainings, taught them about having a healthy edge in their facilities. So it was really an engaging job that I really liked, that I could feel like I was making a difference. And then while I was working there, I was contacted by a member up at BYU Idaho. They were short-staffed for a early childhood feeding class. And so I filled in that year and loved it and realized I could reach so much further by educating adults and that are going out into the world or starting families of their own. So I enjoyed teaching at the university level so much that I actually went back to college and got my master's in health education so I could continue to teach at that level and help others create habits that will help last a lifetime and make a big difference for them.
Thanks for sharing that. The child nutrition job that you shared, that sounds so rewarding and kind of sounds like no 2 days were the same. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, it was definitely. And where I worked in southeastern Idaho, I would go into lots of the different school districts. And that was, I just loved, you know, getting to know so many different people at different levels. And so, yeah, you're right. It kept you on your toes. Things were always a little different.
Thanks for sharing. Overall, you've shared a lot about, you know, your experiences with working as a dietitian. What would you say your two favorite things are that you love about being a dietitian?
So my first would definitely be that I have a career that fits so well with my family. I have always loved that what I went to school for, I use every day with my kids. I love the knowledge that I have in working in a field of health and nutrition. All of us use it every day. So that's my first. My second, I would probably say that I love that it keeps me on my toes. Like, it's a field of science that's always evolving. And I love helping others and promoting wellness. And it's like I had, you know, mentioned earlier, that aha moment. I love to do that with people and kind of empower them with nutrition knowledge and just have them be like, oh, that's amazing. I can do that, you know, and make a difference for them.
Yeah, it's so empowering just when you're working with people and, you know, you teach them something small that they can apply every day, but they've never thought about it before. And see kind of how they feel empowered after that to just make better choices for them and their family. I totally agree with that. I love that too.
It is an exciting part of being a dietitian for sure.
Well, thanks for sharing kind of about your background and what you love about being a dietitian. This week, as the students know, we're talking about life cycle nutrition, just kind of focusing on the first couple of life stages related to pregnancy and infancy and child feeding. You mentioned that the first job that you had, well, not the first job, but the first class that you taught at BYU Idaho was nutrition and young children, the Nutri-112. Mm-hmm. So I thought it'd be fun to talk a little bit about child feeding, and you could give us some good tips about child feeding in general, and maybe we could talk a little bit about picky eaters.
It's one of my favorite topics, so that's Perfect. A great choice.
Awesome. Some of the Nutri-150 students, that maybe they have a young family right now, or they're planning to have a future family. What advice would you give to students about teaching their children the importance of food and nutrition?
So I can't stress enough how important role modeling is. Example is key. Like, I could almost end there. Children are always observing and learning from us. I have a kind of fun example that I share in my class. Years ago, I had a coworker who had a daughter that was in preschool, and she had got off work and picked her up and had come home, and her daughter said, "I want to read to my teddy bears. I want to play a teacher, you know, like my preschool teacher." So she set up her teddy bears on the couch, and she gave her a book. And I mean, this daughter was not able to read yet, but, you know, was kind of telling stories from the pictures. And she said she sat her down and she started to walk out of the room thinking she was set up and happy to read stories to her teddy bears. And as she started walking out of the room, her daughter said, "Wait." And she turned and her daughter looked at her and said, "I need my Diet Coke." And my coworker was just, if you knew this coworker, there was no pop in that house. I mean, she was very healthy and health conscious. And she looked at her daughter, probably surprised that she knew what Diet Coke was, and said, "Well, we don't have any. Can I just get you a glass of water?" And she says, "Well, it needs a straw." And so she got a straw and put it in a glass of water. And then she walked out of the room and just watched. And this little 3-year-old would, you know, like turn the page and tell, you know, the teddy bear went to town, and she would lick her finger, turn the page, turn and sip. You know, the teddy bear sat on a chair, lick the finger, turn and sip. So the mom was so intrigued by this, the next day stayed for preschool to watch story time. And sure enough, that was the exact role model that she was copying. So if you have any habits or things that you maybe don't want your kids to be doing at an early age, keep in mind that your example is key for their healthy choices. You need to make them as well and kind of be that example with them. So that would be my first one. Another thing I would definitely suggest or tell any parent, take time to eat with your families. I really promote family style meal service, sitting together, passing the food, allowing the kids to take the amounts that they want. I use a quote in my course from Elder Oaks. It's from an older talk, but many of you are probably familiar with it, the good, better, and best talk. And I would definitely say family style meal service is one of the best practices that you can do in the field of nutrition and raising kids to be healthy. As far as having that moment of role modeling and helping them grow into the body that's right for them, but to truly have time to talk with them and be with them. And Elder Oaks' quote ends with, "What children really want for dinner is you," and that time spent with them and all the things that it can help prevent, the complications and things that we see in the world. That time spent with them around food and eating is going to make such a big difference in their future with raising kids. And then maybe one more that I would, a piece of advice that I would suggest is to really help kids have a positive self-image. Help them to grow into the body that's right for them. Love who they are and the package that they were given from Heavenly Father, and help them to be active and to be healthy, to search out nutrient-dense foods, and just have that positive self-image. Those would probably be my 3 key pieces of advice that I would share.
Well, those are amazing pieces of advice, and I definitely agree. That's a great foundation for children and being able to develop that good relationship with food. And thank you for sharing that. So let's say, you know, parents are trying to implement that. They're having family meals together. They have their kids around the table, all those different things. What if they have a child who just doesn't want to eat vegetables, or there's a lot of specific foods they really don't want to eat? We might label them as the picky eaters of the world. Have you had experience with this professionally or personally, and could you maybe share some tips of how to work with these children and help them out in this area of picky eating?
Yes, yeah, I have had personal experience. I have five boys, and I definitely have had some that were very picky eaters. And I have, like I mentioned, worked a lot with home daycares and have observed a lot over the years. So one thing I like to point out, and I have done this with numerous classes, but I do a quick little survey, and I have everybody that loves cherry tomatoes raise their hand. And almost every class I've done this in, about half the class raises their hand. And then I say, okay, now who hates cherry tomatoes? And guess what? The other half raise their hand. So it's really interesting. And I ask them, why do you love them? Those that raise their hand high when they loved them. And then always they say they're really sweet. And I love that they pop in your mouth. And then I look at the haters, the ones that hate cherry tomatoes, and they go, oh, that's why I hate them. They pop in my mouth. So some love it and some cringe at the thought of it. So I want, like when I talk about picky eating, I want to help people understand that taste aversions are real. It's important to note that statistics have shown for young children, they can be offered a new food up to 10 to 12 times before it's a true aversion, like a cherry tomato, I love it or hate it. So I don't want people to be discouraged if a child tells them, no, I won't eat that, I don't like it. There's so many ways to incorporate the ability for them to become, for that to be a food that they can actually love. You can change how it was prepared, how it's presented, adding it to familiar foods that served with. Sometimes that helps the pickiest of eaters. But as a dietitian, I also need to be very aware of the behind the scenes with picky eaters. And I need to ask why. You need to kind of put on that detective thinking cap. For example, sometimes it's a mastication issue or a chewing issue. Textures, certain textures can bother people. Maybe their teeth aren't meeting up and so they're not able to bite hard enough to grind and chew the food. So that could be an issue. If you've got a child that's completely avoiding a certain food group, like the dairy group, that's high time to go see your doctor. It might be something like a lactose intolerance, if they're feeling pain and stuff when they eat. But oftentimes for me, it's usually the neophobia. So to break that word apart, the fear of new foods. And one of my favorite stories, I had a student that loved peaches. And he said his mom's peaches were canned peaches at home that were sliced and that was a peach. And he was really young and he was at his grandma's house. And she said, do you want to have peaches? And he got really excited and said, yeah, I love peaches. And so we walked into the kitchen with her and he said, my eyes were level with the counter and she reached over to this fuzzy thing. And that wasn't a peach to him. And he goes, and it got worse. She cut it in half. And when she peeled it apart, there was this big, hard brown thing and red tentacles were reaching up to him. And I just thought it was so cute that to him, like a familiar food of peaches suddenly became like scary and totally, I can't eat that thing. It's fuzzy and it has tentacles reaching up for me. So I think oftentimes with picky eaters, sometimes it can be that simple, just helping them be comfortable, how it's presented, how it's prepared, giving them some ownership. So I guess with my advice for parents that have picky eaters would be pretty simple. Like once again, role model, don't be a short order cook, offer the familiar foods that they're comfortable with the unfamiliar ones. We talk about a term in our class called food jags or getting hung up on the same food. My advice there would be the less you focus on it, the sooner it will go away. And I don't know, there's a lot more that we can do with picky eaters, but yeah, if anyone is interested in more, that Nutrition 112 class, we cover lots of ideas on that topic.
You talked about how it takes maybe even up to 12 times of introducing that new food to a child and maybe introducing it in different ways. We've all seen either in our own families or I always think of Super Nanny when they show the meal times and the kids are just going crazy or the parents are forcing them to stay at the table until they finish their meal or take one bite of this food. So, and you talked a little bit about ownership too. Any thoughts about how parents could find that balance between encouraging the child to eat new foods or to at least try the new food, but not putting that pressure on them so they hate that food or have that negative relationship with that food?
Yeah, I think in my course, one of the main things that we build upon, you know, I talked about good, better, and best practices. And a lot of those practices that you mentioned are things we've all seen, you know, take one more bite before you get down from the table. But is that truly the best practice? Will that one more bite give them all the health and nutrition they need to grow and be successful? You know, so maybe not the battleground you want to create. But the foundation that we build the 112 course on is Ellen Satter's division of responsibility. So basically, we show that there are jobs in eating. And helping the child understand their role and what their job in eating is, and helping the parent understand their role and what their job is, and creating that trust is huge as far as to be successful feeders and eaters on both ends, to be successful, helping that young child grow into the body that's right for them, and understanding that there really is a balance with that. The child gets to decide how much or whether they are in touch with their internal feeding cues. They were born with those. They know when they're full and when they're hungry. They know, like, their body's on a growth spurt. I can't see that, but they know, you know, sometimes I'll watch even my own children just eat and eat and eat. And I'm like, where is that food going? But yeah, knowing that they're on a growth spurt and they truly are hungry, I think that really does make a difference. So kind of creating those jobs in eating, I think, is a real key to helping that balance and, you know, with picky eaters and things like that.
Thanks for sharing that. I think it'd be difficult, and I don't know if you maybe have a experience with this, but when you're teaching parents to trust their kids, especially when it comes to eating, because in most cases, you know, it's the parents know what's best for their children and they can make those decisions, but to think about how, like you said, they're born with those hunger and fullness cues and they know when they're full. Do you have any advice for maybe parents or future parents who might struggle with that idea of trusting their child when it comes to eating?
Yeah, I'm glad that you asked that, Jenna, because it really is the clients that I've worked with over the years. That is one of the hardest things for them to know that they know best and that they're now expected to trust their child to decide how much or even whether they would take a bite of that healthy broccoli that they're offering or things like that. So for me, when I work with clients, I really focus on what the parent's role is. They get to decide what is offered. They get to kind of establish the environment and kind of limit the distractions and create a positive place or a feeding environment for that young child to focus on the food and eating. But then once it comes down to how much or whether, that is where that trust really kicks in. And if they have started, like if it's their child, not just, you know, most of my clients, I'm working with their own individual children, but, you know, I work also with people that are caring for others, kids in home daycares and things like that. But if it's their child and they've worked with them from infancy, it's really interesting. When a newborn baby comes to the world, they cry when they're hungry or need a diaper change. They let you know and you build trust with them by meeting their needs. And so it's really interesting when they get to those toddler years and they're starting to work on their own autonomy and wanting to be in charge and wanting to have a say. And you kind of have to switch roles a little and trust them. You still set up regular meal times. I mean, kids are pretty resilient and understanding that it's not just a grazing, you know, oftentimes kids will come and say they're hungry just when they're bored, just to get some attention. And we as parents and caregivers really feel like, I need to take care of them. They're hungry. That's one of the needs that I'm responsible for. So if you set up regular meals and snack times, it really does help those kids know that if I don't eat all of my breakfast, I'm not going to have anything else until snack time. And you don't stretch it out too far. Just a couple of hours, because they are smaller and have small bellies, that will be hungry often. So eating every 2 and a half hours is pretty regular. And then knowing that when they come to that next meal or snack, they will be hungry and they won't have been distracted by eating snacks and kind of junking up along the way and not eating the healthy dinner that you're offering. So kids are really pretty resilient. And a lot of the clients that I work with, it's really interesting that just these simple changes, kind of laying out this division of responsibility in just a matter of a week, that routine is established and they're such better eaters. Of the student, or not the students, but the clients that I've worked with, it's amazing to me how they come back and say, when trusting that child enough to make their own choices, they do eat better. So and healthier choices, because you're still in charge of what is offered, but letting them decide how much or whether really does help them become a more balanced and better eater.
That's so cool that even within that week, you saw changes occurring in the family and the relationship between the parent and the child.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. One last question I had related to all of this. So last week, I was just kind of talking in the podcast about how the food industry has changed a lot over the last 60 years or so. And I think it's so interesting. So I interviewed Grandpa, who's in his 80s, and he kind of talked about the food that he ate when he was a child. And it was really just, you know, the basics: meat, potatoes, vegetables, you know, fruit, dairy, that sort of thing. But now when we go into a grocery store, we just see, you know, a bunch of kid foods, I guess you could call it, where they're targeting kids with, you know, the Disney characters, the bright colors. And do you think that kind of has an influence on, I don't know, if children, whether or not they would want to eat the kids' foods versus the just, you know, what adults eat, I guess? Any thoughts?
Yes, it's huge. Just what you're saying. Advertising is there's billions of dollars spent on advertising that is focused highly on processed foods, high in fat, high in sugar, foods that we would tend to eat in larger quantities. And there's a lot of interesting statistics out there. One I quote often is 96% of food commercials and advertisements are for these unhealthy food choices, and they're targeted at young children. Marketing is really geared for brand loyalty. And if that's not a familiar term, brand loyalty for young kids is basically they're trying to hook children on brands so that they become biased on that, and it'll carry over to their adult lives, and you'll have a Pepsi drinker for life or a Frosted Flakes purchaser for the rest of their life because they fell in love with Tony the Tiger or things like that. So they're aimed to reach kids at an emotional level. And kids are great salesmen to their parents. So you really do have to be mindful of what they're being sold on. In 2019, I read a report that said customers who feel an emotional connection with a brand have a 306% higher lifetime value with staying with it, and then will always be an advocate for that brand. So you can see why it's money well spent to get those kids attached to that whatever brand or whatever food item. And it's really interesting right now, food companies are really using a lot more website advertising to promote brand loyalty in kids. There's a term called gamification, where it kind of links kids to customer retention and having fun with shopping and interactive and convenience. And they know that kids can be very persuasive with their parents. So we need to be careful as health professionals monitoring that food industry and practices, you know, what they're using with the new media. So my suggestion for parents, I think we just need to be mindful how big the food industry is and how strongly they do target our kids. And I'd want to encourage parents to be critical thinkers. Use their critical thinking skills in response to advertising messages. If their kid's begging them to buy whatever this bag of chips that they see advertised, I always would recommend that they examine the nutrition label for their favorite products and aim for nutrient-dense, healthy choices. That should be far above brand loyalty.
Yeah, that's some really good advice about how parents can navigate the industry, the food industry, and how to help their children have a nutrient-dense diet. Well, thank you so much, Miranda. You've really shared some great tips when it comes to child feeding. I know that as, you know, the listeners hear your tips, that it'll benefit them and their future families. So I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jenna. I just am so, like I mentioned, love promoting health. And I hope that your listeners realize that instilling these small health habits at this early age can make such a huge difference for the rest of their lives. And I often say happy and healthy parents can make happy and healthy children. So I just want to wish all your listeners the best as they head out into the world and realize what a difference they can make with child nutrition.
Thank you so much. I love that phrase. I hadn't heard that, but I'm going to start using that now. So the last thing that I usually do is the lightning round of questions. Do you have time for that?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So it's just the quick questions that help the listeners get to know you a little bit more.
Okay.
So what is your favorite food?
I love pizza.
Nice. Any particular toppings?
So barbecued chicken smoked on a Traeger is my absolute favorite, but I have so much fun with pizza and playing with toppings. Yeah.
Nice. That barbecue one sounds good.
Mm-hmm. It is a good one.
What is your favorite vegetable?
I love fried zucchini.
What's your favorite snack food?
I like popcorn.
Nice. And then what inspires you?
I would definitely say my kids. I think there's something to, wanting to be a good mom and being a good example for them. That's definitely inspirational for me.
Would you rather only wear one color each day or have to wear 7 colors each day?
One color. I would like to keep it simple. I just had to smile at your would you rather. I have a 9-year-old that does these constantly. that was a pretty mild one. I've had some pretty crazy would you rathers.
You've had some practice then at answering.
Yeah, he's into that.
That's awesome. If you could have any animal as a pet, what animal would you choose?
So I love horses, but I know when you think of pets, like not an indoor horse, but like, often people think of indoor animals, but yeah, I think I would love to have a horse.
Okay, nice. What's your least favorite season?
Oh, that's a tough one because I like the changes of season, but I don't like the mud of spring probably, but I love the flowers of it and stuff and the green turning green, but probably the rainy muddiness is my least favorite.
Okay. And then one other would you rather question. Would you rather live without the internet or live without air conditioning and heating?
Oh, I sure like my air conditioning and heating. I think I'm going to say no internet. I know that sounds probably so crazy to people, but I like to be the right temperature.
I totally understand that. As a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
So early on, I wanted to be a vet, like I liked animals. But then the older I got and realized what vets had to do, I did not want to be. Maybe a zookeeper would have been a better, to pet them and feed them. Like that was my level of what I thought a veterinarian would be.
Right. And then just call the vet if there's any issues.
Medical.
Okay. And then last question. I know we're kind of out of quarantine, but I guess maybe during quarantine, did you develop any new hobbies?
So this is a funny one because I'm not very crafty. My hobby has always kind of been my job that I fit in around my family. But my sister gave me a diamond art paint set. So if anyone's ever painted by number, it's kind of like that. It's like a picture, and it was a beautiful picture of the Salt Lake Temple with tulips, a beautiful spring picture. And but you have to take these little tiny colors and put the dot on the sticky part. And I completed a whole painting during quarantine with my kids. They definitely helped, but it was very tedious. So I would say that's a new talent. No.
Yeah. Wow. That's so awesome. I've never heard of that, but that sounds really cool.
Yeah. It's kind of a paint by number, but with little plastic diamond art things. Yeah.
Oh man. Nice.
They have all sorts of pictures.
Well, that's it. Thank you again, Miranda.
Yes, thank you for having me. That lightning round was fun. I worried I wasn't going fast enough.
Oh, no, it was good.
Oh, good. Thanks, Jenna. Have a good afternoon.
You too. Thank you so much for joining us today and throughout the semester as we took this journey beyond the classroom to learn more about nutrition and nutrition-related fields. A big thanks to Miranda Taylor for being on the show today and sharing with us her knowledge of child feeding. And thank you to all of the guest speakers who joined us on the podcast this semester. It has been a true privilege to host this podcast throughout the semester. Students, I wish you all the best in your future endeavors as you continue down the path of pursuing your career, whether it's in nutrition or in another field of study. Remember, discover the area of study that you are truly passionate about and learn to love learning. Elder Bednar said this at a commencement speech he gave at BYU Provo on the topic of learning to love learning. He said, "Today, as we bask in the satisfaction of worthy accomplishment, each of us certainly realizes that academic assignments, test scores, and a cumulative GPA have not produced a final and polished product. Rather, you have only started to put in place a foundation of learning upon which you can build forever. Much of the data and knowledge obtained through a specific major or program of study may rapidly become outdated and obsolete. The particular topics investigated and learned are not nearly as important as what has been learned about learning. As we press forward in life spiritually, interpersonally, and professionally, no book of answers is readily available with guidelines and solutions to great challenges of life. All we have is our capacity to learn and our love of and for learning. The ability to learn how to learn and learn to love learning will set you on a path for success." Thank you again for joining us for this episode of Beyond the Classroom. Have a great week and good luck with finals!